Lanza. Welcome to the show. Happy Humper to all of you. Bill Leff is off today. Dane Neal is sitting in his place. I'm Wendy Snyder, and welcome to WGN Radio.
It's a good Wednesday.
It is a good Wednesday. I was listening to Vivian and her on fleek lingo, and I just feel old.
Well, you wonder how many of these are legitimate, like really catch on. I mean, some of them are obviously, you know, but some of them are maybe just passing kind of fads, even within the younger lingo community. You know,
are you see? I'm so confused. And Bertrand is our age. You're a little younger, Dane. So are you? What are you?
I'm a Gen Xer.
Okay. Because I am, Bertrand, we are right on the cusp of Boomer and Gen X.
Right. I was born in 63.
Me
and
too.
I think 64 is the youngest Boomer.
Yeah, but I thought for a while we weren't included in the Boomer.
Well, we are.
I don't want to be a Boomer.
What's wrong with being a Boomer? I mean,
it makes me feel old.
You just be you. Okay, Wendy.
All right, but here's why I feel old, and women will understand this more than men.
You've got so many reasons for feeling old. Your label shouldn't be one of them. I'm sorry.
He's the wind beneath your wing. Right, here he is. This
he is
uplifting.
Not the wind.
That's why he's, right, his nickname is Uplifting Steve.
He's the scissors that cuts my wing.
Well, I was told I was ripping on Dane last time, so I just want to be a little more helpful.
You know, this whole skinny jean thing, you want a pair of jeans that fit you tightly. But if you put them on and wear them throughout the day, they stretch out. So you sometimes go a little bit smaller because you want it to be tight. So I feel like as I was shimmying into my tight jeans this morning, I threw my back out. How old is that?
I think that could happen to anyone in the jeans. And maybe this is a cautionary tale that there should be some sort of disclaimer. I don't want to say go the full route of a waiver form, but some instructions on there, maybe like this is the recommended use or something like that.
You should have day jeans and evening jeans.
Oh, I should just wear sweatpants and be like George Costanza.
Yes.
What about jeggings? They have skinny jeggings.
I know, and the jeggings stretch. These jeans, you know, some jeans have more stretch than others. There's minimal stretch here, but it just was... I don't know if you've ever seen a woman putting on pantyhose. It's not pretty. It looks like you're wrestling an alligator on your bed. I'm sorry.
Now, on the jean side, and on the comfort jean side, and on maybe pushing the envelope on the jean side, Esther has a pair that we joke about, and the kids joke about. I don't know if they're quite pajama jeans or if they're jeggings, but they really are kind of tights, but they have been painted through some process to
resemble denim.
To the untrained eye, it looks like...
You know, there's a pocket and the
pockets are not real.
Right, and the yellow stitching that makes it look like... Yeah, I have a pair of those too.
So I guess they're comfortable, but they're just not practical if you want to put stuff in them or anything like that.
So one of my favorite phrases is mutton dressed as lamb. Right?
Yeah.
So when you become an older person and you try to dress like a younger lamb, it's not an attractive thing. It's time to let go and let mutton
take over.
Yeah, you know.
So is that directed to me?
No, I think just in general, you know. I think it happens to women more than men, although not always, but you know, where you're trying to, it's just, you got to embrace where you are.
Yeah, but you also need to have change every once in a while because, it's not fair to talk about Bill when he's not here. Ah, yeah, it is. he has a good pair of jeans going now. Jasmine, I know that you started interning with us many, many years ago.
Right.
And there were some, I don't know if you remember this pair of shorts where it looked like it was almost acid washed.
Yeah, questionable. Very questionable.
Yes. And he had some jeans. They were baggy. It's like, you know, Bill, you're in great shape. Why are you wearing mom jeans? They weren't really technically mom jeans.
So just so that we're all on the same page on the apples to apples side, the definition of the mom jeans is, I'm thinking a very high waist.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe there's even an elastic section in the back, right? And then like a long kind of frontal thing and maybe
baggy.
Some poochy hip area.
Poochy? Paunchy? Poochy?
Poochy. Like
I don't know.
Pooches out. Like, you know, kind of.
They're baggy.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't mom jeans. And Bill, if you're listening, I we'll take that back. All I'm
cool
saying,
aunt jeans. He was wearing cool.
He
aunt.
Was, and my roundabout compliment is he got some new jeans. and they look awesome. So, right. Steve, sometimes the mutton has to go back to lamb, and it's not bad.
Do that again. I dare you.
No.
I'm not saying you have to dress badly or like in a dowdy way. I'm just saying, you know, you get to a point where you need to stop trying to look like a 22-year-old.
And oh, I passed that a long time ago.
Some people have a hard time doing that.
I would like to look like a 35-year-old. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Thanks for the compliments.
I'll say the world. Jasmine, yes!
All right, it's Wendy Snyder in with Dane Neal. Bill is off for the next couple of days. He'll be back on Monday. Bertrand's here, Mary Vandeveld, and it's WGN Radio. All right, we are back in action, and we're old. That's all I'm telling you. I feel old. I kind of threw out my lower back trying to get my jeans on this morning. God, that's embarrassing to say out loud.
It isn't, because the back situation, and I think a lot of listeners will know, agree, and appreciate that the pain level that can come with a back kind of tweaking or injury that can happen for any reason. It can happen for no reason. I mentioned off the air that I had like a coughing fit, you know, sometimes where you just can't stop coughing.
Yes.
Not for an extended, not for weeks or months, but just for, and I threw my back out, somehow tweaked it. And it is, you need to respect that. If you think, oh, how bad could it be? If your back is kind of tweaked in a certain way, you can't get up, you can't breathe, you can't move, and it can last for days.
Yeah.
You know, so you just...
That's why Doan's pills are so popular.
is that why?
I think so.
It's when you bend and twist, Wendy. So reenact for us how you were doing it. Did you bend over and then twist behind or something?
No, I was putting my pants on and I was...
One leg at a time this time?
Yes.
Okay.
I was doing like a hula hoop thing to try and get them on. Oh, God, that hurts. But, you know, people, when people say, I threw out my back, in the past, I've been like, yeah, right. How do you throw your back out? It's really bad.
And it can be for, like I said, any reason. You know, you're lifting something heavy and sometimes maybe you don't really feel it till later. Or no reason. You can just you know, sneeze. You can turn wrong. And you can tweak it.
Okay, how about this to satisfy your problem of sagging toward the end of the day?
Yeah.
Which we all do. You developed a pair of jeans with a thin sort of balloon throughout so that you could inflate them and the air would then forever keep them firm.
But then you now, look bigger, so no women would want to do that.
It might be a quarter inch. It'd be a quarter inch
like
bigger.
The Reebok pump, but yeah, for jeans.
So they'd always fit snugly.
I'll say the world. Yeah, why don't you market that?
I think I will.
Yeah, I don't think anybody'd buy it.
We'll see about that.
Patty's on the line. Hi, Patty.
Hey, how are you?
I threw out my back putting my jeans on. God, I'm old.
I know. Been there, done that. I was just telling the gal before, I can't tell you how many fingernails I've broken. Just getting dressed and just to look current, keep up with the times, you know, and there go a couple fingernails, you know, putting on the tight stuff.
Crazy. I know.
Boots, socks, boots, the whole 9 yards. And
why do we bother, Patty? Why do we even bother?
I don't know, hon. I don't know. But I'm done. That's it.
All right. Well, Dane and I were talking off the air about our grandmothers, and maybe we should go back to this style, Dane.
Okay. Maybe the... And I remember on the grandma side, always wearing like a, I think we called it like a house dress. It was nice. It was floral. Yeah. It seemed very comfortable and flowy.
With the apron.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a nondescript kind of covering, you know, like if you threw a sheet over someone, right, and cut a hole for the neck. It just seemed like it was kind of easy to do. And
it was a house dress.
Yeah. Or house coat, as we called it. Yeah. All right, let's bring house dresses back. And by the way, just out of curiosity, Patty, if you had jeans and, you know, like mid-afternoon butt sag or something, they get a little loose, would you wear a pair of jeans that had a little pump in it that would then fill up?
See? No.
Bertrand, you're 0 for 2.
Sorry, Steve. No. Okay. No, well, not going to happen.
It's a work in progress.
Thank you, Patty.
Okay, dear. Thanks.
Have a good one.
Just as Steve is like in the lab, you know, with the R&D and trying to work out all the bugs for the latest advancement in gene technology.
Watching women put on their pants.
For journalistic purposes. Of course, of course. So I think that jeans over the years have advanced quite a bit. Not only just were they able to recreate the visual look of it in the pajama jean, but also just in making them more user, like jeans these days, they have a little bit of give where back in the day they didn't.
Flex.
I remember hearing stories of people having to get their jeans kind of just to get into them, like wet, and then get into them.
And then they form the Levi's 501s. They, you know, were so stiff. It was like they were made out of cardboard or something.
I miss those.
Really? Did you have them?
The jeans I have on now are almost elastic.
I know, they really have. I know what you mean. Right? It's a flex fabric that it's much more comfortable, but too much flex fabric, and it's like, I don't know. It feels like you're wearing sweatpants.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, Wendy.
Are you wearing sweatpants?
No, I'm not.
All right, you can't wear them in public.
No, but I'm just, you know, I'm pro sweatpants. I'm not against the sweatpant situation.
So talking about the house dress, I really am going back.
Do they still make those? Because now I think you'll see that, I think, you know, as people kind of get older, and certainly on the, you know, people that are kind of into the whole fashion thing, is that there's a lot of ways to kind of stay young and current and kind of age gracefully into the fashion scene. You know, it's not like everybody has to, you know, wear tube tops and, you know, Daisy Dukes or something their entire life. I think there's lots of ways to stay current, look great, and still feel and look young.
Well, it's funny how, you know, fashion trends do make a comeback. The hippie thing is kind of back. So 70s stuff, you know, you had the boot cut and bell bottoms. They definitely came back. The 80s, I don't know, are members only jackets back? I think they kind of are.
Sure. Doesn't it seem like everything that's kind of old at least sort of makes, you know, takes a stab at coming back? I don't know. Esther went, I think for Halloween, she went as an 80s person. And I don't think the kids understood what it was. They just thought she had like a big hair clip and maybe some neon pink tank top underneath a sweater.
And they didn't get it.
We had neighbors younger than us who threw an 80s party a couple of years ago.
What'd you wear?
Stuff in our closet. And they're all like, dressed up like Madonna, and I just got my stuff that I wore in the 80s.
You still have it. And the good news is, Steve, it still fits you.
Yeah, for the most part.
All right, somebody has, I think here is your entrepreneurial idea. Bertrand, you and I can go in on this. 630 says there's a lack of updated clothes for the not old woman in her 50s and 60s. And I haven't hit 60 yet. I'm closer to that than 50 now. But it's kind of true. If you go to, you know, like the ladies section, it's, you know, it's just stuff that I wouldn't wear. Why can't you get a look of Forever 21, but make it Forever 61?
This feels sort of think tankish, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that there is a brand. Because you think different, either whether it's clothing manufacturers or box stores or whatever. Maybe there's something online. There's a lot of things out there. And they tell you now, if you've seen the commercials, this is accurate. You know, you could just take a picture of yourself with your phone and get a perfect fit. You know, they say that you can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is, but I don't know if there's a brand or a store that has really taken ownership of that age group. I don't know.
Well, and I'll be 73 on New Year's Eve, but I'm not ready for Alfred Dunner clothes. I hate going shopping. It's hard to find a middle ground for fashion.
See, the problem is older women, and I understand this is a criticism, don't want to go in those stores.
You know, I'll go in any store. I've gone in Forever 21.
Yeah, you shouldn't go in. That's my point.
Why? I shouldn't go in there?
If there was a store made for Forever 21 for 50s and 60s, I think ladies might not want to go in there because they wouldn't want to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Hey, I'm old. Just call it that.
Right, exactly. Hey. Hey, we made it.
All right. And happy birthday to Ann Turner Cook. She turns 93 today. Do you know who Ann Turner Cook is? I didn't either. She is the original Gerber baby. So was the most beautiful baby ever.
Was it a real baby? It was sort of drawn. Maybe I'm thinking of
it. Well, yeah, it was a card, like a sketching.
Yes.
She posed for it. So happy 93rd birthday to Ann Turner Cook. I'll see you at Forever 21. We'll go shopping later on. Bill F. is off today. Dane Neal's in his chair. And I can't wait to talk to our next guest after the news. Tell you more about it in just a second. It's WGN. All right. I am just completely gushing about our next guest. So I'm just going to go right back into it. Robin Stevenson is with us. She is an award-winning author. And you have a book called Kid Activists. First of all, thank you so much for coming up.
Thank you for having me here.
You've been all over Facebook. What I first got wind of, Heidi Stevens from the Chicago Tribune wrote an article about you scheduled to go to an elementary school. Was it Wheaton Warrenville?
Yes, that's right. Longfellow Elementary School.
Okay, you were scheduled to go there to talk about your book, Kid Activists. And all of a sudden, you were scheduled to go. And what happened? Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, I got a call from my publisher the night before letting me know that the school had canceled.
How long had this been booked? Quite some time.
Yeah, quite some time. I think the plans had been kind of in the works for a couple of months.
And it's been promoted and
yes,
it's all over the place.
I had just done a week touring in California, and this was to be my first stop on the Chicago area leg of the tour. Yeah.
And so they called with how many days' notice? Was it...
It was the night before.
Oh, God. Jeez. Yeah. Okay, so your publicist says, hey, listen, this school has canceled. And obviously your first question is, why?
Right, exactly. And my publicist said that they had got a call asking if Harvey Milk was one of the activists included in the book. And the... if Harvey Milk was included in the presentation, he is one of the activists included in the book. And at that, and then they heard that the school had decided to cancel the talk.
Okay, first of all, very crazy. I need to know more about Harvey Milk. I was just telling you off the air, I have two sons. One's going to be 17 next month. One is 20. They are so much more involved in everything, politically, environmentally, caring more mm-hmm. than I was when I was between that 17 and 20-year-old range. So elementary kids students are learning more. They should learn more. I understand that it's a parent's decision about when they discuss issues with their kids. However, if they don't discuss these issues, LGBTQ issues, everything with their kid, the kid kind of is behind everyone else. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are LGBTQ kids in these schools.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important that those kids also get to see themselves represented in the books that they read and in the curriculum that they're taught, that if we're talking about activists throughout history, we should be talking about all kinds of activism. So, you know, the book includes people fighting for women's right to vote, abolition of slavery, civil rights, disability rights. And to me, it would have been a glaring omission not to also include gay rights as part of that history.
Yeah. And there was one parent from the reports that I've read that complained about it. And it's shameful to me that the school canceled the whole thing because of one student. In my opinion, why didn't that student just take the day off? I mean, really, that's all I have to say.
I think in a lot of different contexts, maybe that would be something that can be done in a cheerful, positive, respectful way, saying that you don't need to necessarily participate in that. No one's going to make you or force you into something that you don't feel is right for you, your kids, your family. But your decision to do that shouldn't impact everyone else's access to what the school, at least up to this point, had said was an important situation that they felt had a lot of value. One of the things I wanted to get your thoughts on was, just in general, just kids' roles as, and Wendy kind of intimated that the kids are a lot different, a lot more advanced in a bunch of different situations and access to information than maybe we were when we were kids. And you're seeing, whereas colleges used to be kind of the place traditionally where you saw so many, whether it's demonstrations or activism and things like that, and now you're seeing it obviously with with high schools, you know, whether it's the shooting side or some of those other things. Do you think that part of the reason to put it in there isn't to circumvent that parent and kid conversation, but maybe to kind of share or at least give sort of a pathway or an avenue to start that conversation from the other side? Because when you hear about people, especially on the LGBT situation, a lot of the things that they share is that they wanted to say some, didn't know how, didn't know it would be acceptable. The parents were maybe unaware. So this can at least kind of show examples of a pathway to start that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's really important. I think it's important that kids know that this is something that they can bring up with their parents if they have questions or they have worries, that it's something that they can talk about and that they will be supported. I think that's really important. And I do agree with what you're saying about this generation of kids being, you know, very informed, very aware, quite politically engaged. We're seeing it with the environmental activism. You know, when I began this tour, it was around the time Greta Thunberg was speaking at the United Nations. And and so the kids had been involved and following about the climate strikes. And, you know, and I think they're very engaged and aware in their communities and wanting information and wanting to learn. And I think better that they have access to information which is accurate and appropriate for their age level, rather than just looking stuff up on the internet.
And I can see if you are not part of the LGBTQ community and you're an adult and weren't around it very much, I can see where you'd be confused about it. But I'm sorry, you have to accept it. It's a part of life now. And I was just reading, starting next school year, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender history will be part of the curriculum in Illinois public schools. Now, does this mean elementary school through high school? I mean, it's part of history. It's part of our lives. It's part of what we're seeing now.
Yeah, I mean, I think at different age levels, LGBTQ curriculum is looks different. For example, when my son was starting kindergarten, I let his teacher know that he has two moms. And she was, a very kind person who wanted to be inclusive and make sure that he didn't feel left out when they talked about family. So she asked if I had any picture book recommendations so that when they talked about family, she could include different types of families.
That's a good teacher.
And it's a great teacher. It's a great teacher. And back then, my son's 15, there actually were not very many of those resources. Now there are so many more. So I think there's a lot of really great resources that teachers can draw on at every grade level, starting with different family structures with preschool and kindergarten kids and up to, history curriculum in high school. So I think it looks different at different grade levels, but it's certainly something that you can talk about appropriately at any age level. And there are kids from families that have two moms or have two dads or have a relative or family member who's transgender. And there are kids who come out during their time in school.
Exactly.
And they need that information.
My youngest, Dylan, went to a home daycare setting, and there were two kids that had two dads. And to him, it was cool because it was different. Right. So we're being exposed to it. And, whether you choose to accept it, I don't believe you're born with hate. It's a conversation that I think this would have been a great conversation for that parent to talk to their child about it and maybe even keep them away from school that day, but at least talk about it.
Yeah,
that's my thought.
Yeah, my hope is that the book could be a good jumping off point for actually a lot of different conversations about a number of different issues. And I think there are certainly, I've heard from parents who are reading it with their kids and who are using it as a jumping off point for talking about a number of different issues.
Part of it is it's relevant in a bunch of different areas. I think some of it, on the precedent side, certainly one of these situations happened here, but you got to figure this is the kind of thing that could happen around the country. Right. And so what you would want to do when you got the word that it was going to be postponed or canceled, is if you could find a way, maybe even preemptively, kind of arm the school with things to say that, like, well, here's what we did, just in case you get, anybody that's going to do some backlash or doesn't want to participate or doesn't want it to happen. Here's what we did in Omaha, or here's what they ended up doing here, and you may find an acceptable solution. Is there any thought to that? Like how can we kind of be armed with a way to kind of insulate it going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that school districts can look at, because I think it's important that teachers and librarians and people who are working with kids directly and wanting to be inclusive know that they have the support of their principals, of their school districts, of the teachers' unions. I'm from Canada, so I don't exactly know what the structures are in Illinois, but that they have the support of those groups of people. So that, and I think that's one of the ways in which sort of having legislation like this is helpful, that they can say this is actually part of our curriculum, this is part of our job. If we don't do this, we're actually leaving out a part of the education that these kids should be getting. And I think having some conversations and resources around, how do you respond to objections and pushback?
And even helpful. So, maybe there's a packet that you can have that the school could be armed with as well for those parents that say, here's some ways that you can follow up and have that that kind of extended conversation afterwards. People are allowed to like or think or act in whatever way that they want.
True.
But we can kind of arm them with all of those things. And so, because I think you're doing them a disservice by excluding it, regardless of where they land.
Well, that's where this comes in. Robin Stevenson was supposed to appear at which school was it? Because I would like to say it.
Longfellow Elementary, right?
That's right, yeah.
And so they canceled the night before, and the Daily Herald published a letter that you wrote saying that basically this action sends a harmful message to students, and particularly to students who are themselves LGBTQ or have family members who are part of that community. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back because I want to see what the outcome was of your letter being posted. And she is awesome. She is Robin Stevenson. You can go to robinstevenson.com. Your latest book, Kid Activists. I know I'm not a kid anymore, but I would like to read it. And we will talk more coming up next on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal. Bill Leff is off for the rest of this week. He will return on Monday. We're talking with Robin Stevenson, a children's book author. Her book is called Kid Activists. I need to clarify a few things. First of all, Robin, you were invited to Longfellow Elementary School in Wheaton to speak about your book, and you were going to talk about Martin Luther King Jr. and Frederick Douglass and a parent allegedly got worried about this, and Longfellow canceled your appearance the night before. I don't want to diss them. This is a situation that perhaps they've not had to deal with before. So we're talking to you today so we can all learn. Dane, you had given Robin some suggestions, and you did send out a letter to, was it the parents or the school, to explain what you'd be talking about?
Yeah, so the tour was organized by my publisher, and they work with local bookstores in each community to set up the visits with the schools. So Anderson's Bookstore had booked the visit at the elementary school and sent out a flyer with the description of the book for parents, and given kids a chance to pre-order the book if they wanted to have it signed when I came to the school. So that information did go out.
And your open letter in the Daily Herald, just saying, you know, it was kind of a disservice. I can understand where you'd feel slighted, and also the day before. Something became of that letter, and now you have another appearance. What's going on with you now?
Yes. So State Rep Tara Costa Howard reached out and invited me to come back down to Illinois. And I'm going to be speaking tonight at Glenbard West High School in Glen Ellen at 7 p.m. And at 5 p.m. I'll be doing a signing of the book at the bookstore of Glen Ellen.
And is all this information on your website at robinstevenson.com? So if people are listening now and like, wait a minute, Glenbard, which Glenbard?
It is actually not. I've shared it on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Okay.
But I haven't actually updated my website. But yeah, 5 p.m. at the bookstore of Glen Ellen and 7 p.m. at Glenbard West High School.
There are many Glenbards, so it's
important. I know. But that's okay. You can follow her on Facebook at Robin Stevenson Author. Twitter, just Google her. You've really been in the news. And what has, I noticed a lot of the comments were totally in your favor. You've gotten so much support about this.
Yeah, actually, that's been the real upside of this whole situation, is that I've heard from so many parents, graduates, teachers, students, with really supportive messages, and many people who obviously very much want to see schools be inclusive, want mm-hmm. to show their support for LGBTQ youth. I've been really blown away by the amount of support coming from this area.
And, you know, we're getting mixed emotions on the text lines as well. If you're gay, you know from a very early age, experimentation does not turn you gay or straight, but opens you up to a lot more chances of catching a sexually transmitted disease. Thanks for worrying, 630. Another call, just let them figure it out by themselves and don't push them. Listen, when you're given information about our history, how is that pushing anyone? It's just giving a history lesson.
Right. I mean, for me, I think if I'm writing about figures in history, we're talking about, for example, in the chapter about Martin Luther King, acknowledging his marriage to Coretta Scott, you know, and so we're talking about heterosexuality. For me, it's no different if we acknowledge this particular character was gay, or not character because he's a real people, but this particular figure was a gay activist. This person was a civil rights activist. You know, it's not talking about sexuality. It's talking about human rights. It's talking about diversity. It's acknowledging that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people exist and always have. And I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge.
And it's important, too, that it kind of encapsulate the full scope of activism and kind of, you know, presenting it as something that has happened, has an important role in our history, and some of those figures and personalities who've been iconic in it. And so this is just one part of it, but it's the full scope. And I think that's important to recognize as well.
Kid Activists. Again, go to Facebook at Robin Stevenson Author. You can go to Anderson's, your favorite local bookstore. I imagine it's available on Amazon as well.
Yes.
I like to go into a bookstore because I like to actually touch and feel and look at the book, it's beautiful.
And it's so important to support our independent bookstores.
Absolutely. I have a question you may not have the answer to, but I find it interesting, and I like to discuss both sides of things. This is from 815. How do you explain this to Christian families who know this does not follow the teachings of the Bible?
I think that families are free to teach their own children what their values are as parents. I hope that they will keep in mind that the fact that they have those beliefs doesn't mean that their kids will not be LGBT. And having many adult friends who grew up in families that were not supportive, I think that, you know, it's very sad if a child is growing up in a situation where they know that they won't be supported if they come out.
And then they won't come out to their family.
Right. So, but I think parents certainly have the right to share what their values are with their children, and to teach what they want. I think they also, they don't have the right to demand that schools, teach from a particular religious framework. I mean, schools are serving the needs of all kinds of children from different backgrounds, from different belief systems, different religions, including children from, LGBTQ families. And I think they need to be inclusive in how they teach. But parents certainly are free to share what their own values and beliefs are with their children.
Who else is covered in kid activists? I got to read this. I never liked history class. When I never paid attention in high school. I was more worried about who was having the party that weekend. I'll be honest with you.
So this book is actually the newest book in a series called Kid Legends. And it's a series of books that are biographies of famous people. But it's a little different than most biographies because it focuses on what they were like when they were children. So for the people in this book that I thought I knew a fair bit about, I still learned a lot because I didn't know much about their childhoods. So it includes Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony, Harvey Milk, Dolores Huerta, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King Jr., James Baldwin, Nelson Mandela, Emma Watson, Janet Mock, Helen Keller, Alexander Hamilton, Ruby Bridges, Iqbal Masih, Malala Yousafzai, and Autumn Peltier.
There are a couple, I gotta be honest with you, I'm not familiar with. I'm not gonna embarrass myself and say which one, so I need to read your book and find out more about these.
Well, I wanted to include some of the names that kids would recognize, but also introduce them to a couple of people that they might not know yet. So.
And you have some that are in the history books, and I think in, whether it's Hamilton and some of those other ones, some that are more modern where there's a lot of information, and then some that are current, like with Malala, and that is a kid activist, or that was a kid activist, in that, walking that walk, and I think to bring it kind of full scope is really cool.
Yeah, I really wanted, I mean, the book, like I said, it focuses on mostly on people who became famous for things they did as adults, but I really wanted kids to know that you don't have to wait until you're an adult to make a difference in the world. So the last four activists in the book are all people who were activists as children, became activists as children. It ends with a chapter about Autumn Peltier, who's an indigenous 15-year-old water protector, and she talks about wanting to inspire other kids to step up and do this work and make a difference. So I wanted to sort of end the book with her words.
Amazing work. I am so honored to meet you. You're doing a great job. I will end with this text. What difference does it make if someone of notoriety in history was gay or transgender or whatever? Teach the kids what they did, not their sexual preference. Are we going to teach that a person was straight? I do agree with that to some point. It should be their accomplishments, not how they feel. However, kids who are in the community, the LGBTQ community, need to know that they can conquer the world as well.
Absolutely. And in the case of someone like Harvey Milk, it is relevant because one of the things that he fought for was gay rights. And, for example, he was instrumental in defeating legislation which would have banned gay teachers from teaching in schools in California. So to talk about him without talking about his work for gay rights wouldn't make a lot of sense.
You love who you love. I'm sorry whether you believe in that or not. If you love someone and someone says you can't love them, I think you'd be very upset about that. It's really an honor to meet you. I wish you nothing but success. I truly am going to purchase this book and learn something because I should have paid attention more. She's Robin Stevenson. You can follow her on Facebook, Robin Stevenson Author, Twitter at Robin_Stevenson, and Instagram, Robin Stevenson Writes. And you have your appearances, which are tonight, 7 p.m. Glenbard West in Glen Ellen, and then you have another one that I don't remember.
I'm assigning at 5 p.m. at the bookstore of Glen Ellen.
Good continued success and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
All right, Bill Leff is off today. Dane Neal is sitting in his chair. I'm Wendy Snyder, and it's all happening right here, 720 WGN. I feel like I should start this segment singing Food, Glorious Food, because Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. We're going to talk to somebody from the Butterball Turkey Talk Line coming up after 11:30. But right now, more food, Dane.
More. Even more, and not even just in quantity, and certainly is that, but on the quality side too, and just hitting it out of the park. Excited, got an opportunity to do sort of the media preview and check out the new Timeout Market that's at 916 West Fulton Market. It is, you hear about the food halls and food courts, and of course we remember the mall with the Panda Express and the Sbarro. Nothing wrong with that. This takes some of our brightest stars on the culinary side, puts them in what is a beautiful and expansive space. And the appointments all down to the, whether it's the places that are there or the tables and stuff, it's really, really great. And here's the thing that's a little bit different, right? And you mentioned it as we were, is Timeout. It's the Timeout Market. How do they fit into all this? Not necessarily always considered, if they don't make cookbooks, maybe they do. On the line with us to help us kind of figure it out is the editor of Timeout Chicago, Morgan Olson. Morgan, welcome to WGN.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I love Timeout Chicago, and I don't understand where now you have food. I'm puzzled.
Absolutely. Yeah, Timeout Chicago has been around for the last 14 years, providing Chicagoans with news and all the best restaurants and bars. And so this was a natural brand evolution for us of being able to create a brick-and-mortar space that really showcases what we do in the magazine through amazing chefs and beverages, as well as cultural programming. So it really is bringing the magazine to life.
Well, Morgan, give a little insight for the listeners into this, the space itself. We'll talk about some of those great chefs, and you have an incredible lineup. But the space itself, it's beautiful. It's in, not only is it a great place inside, it is in one of the great places, one of our kind of culinary centers here in the Chicago metropolitan area. But the space itself, talk about it.
Absolutely. So the space itself is 50,000 square feet. So let that sink in. We're built
it's
across
like an airplane hangar.
It is. It's massive. An airplane hangar filled with amazing food. But we're spread across three floors. So most of our chef vendors are down on the first floor. On the second floor, we've got a demonstration kitchen. We've got a hidden speakeasy bar from the co-owners of Lost Lake. We've got an amazing kitchen up there, too, from Arami doing sushi. And then we've got this beautiful rooftop bar up top that is just amazing city views, excellent cocktails. And it's actually named after our founder, Tony Elliott.
And this is year-round rooftop bar, correct?
Yes, all season. So there's a huge space indoors, and then there's a terrace for nicer weather days.
So, Morgan, talk a little bit about kind of getting people on board with this. We've got so many great experiences and places and ways to enjoy food and events here in Chicago. This is something that's exciting, but talk about kind of that formation of it and the genesis of kind of putting it together.
Absolutely. When we announced this 2 years ago, we really hit the ground running as far as going to the restaurants, going to the bars again and again and again, and really tracking down our favorite chefs in the city and inviting them to be a part of this. A lot of them were so, so excited to join. And over the last 2 years, we have assembled an all-star lineup of chefs. But it really is curated by our editorial team. We went out and tried and tested and had the delicious task of putting this lineup together.
Yeah, you think of a food court, in every respect, it is nothing like that. I think just in form and function, maybe it is, but there is so much great stuff in there. We're going to have Abe Conlon, a James Beard Award winner, on with us a little bit later on in this segment. John Mannion there has got the Maximo rib, which is this huge beef rib that is absolutely incredible.
Like Fred Flintstone-y kind of thing.
I think what they did here is they allowed these great chefs to be everything that they are and everything that's already appreciated, but also kind of stretch out into some different concepts as well. So we talked about Abe and we talked John Mannion, but go ahead, Morgan, like fill us in on some of the other kind of superstars that you have there. It's a great lineup.
Absolutely. We've got Tai Dang of Hai Su and Cafe Da in Pilsen. He is bringing his, tried and true Vietnamese recipes to us. We've got the folks from Dos Urban Cantina doing Mexican, specifically some amazing tacos. You know, we talked about John Mannion. We've also got Chicago classics. So we have the deep dish. We have the Italian beef. We have the Chicago hot dog. So folks who are coming in from out of town and want that experience, and, of course, locals who love those dishes can also have that experience at Time Out Market.
So Morgan, what's the price point? I'm sorry, I haven't been there yet.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We're open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and the price points really vary, you know, throughout the day. So everybody has stuff on their menu that is priced appropriately for lunch, but then, you know, we've got folks who, you know, have the Maximo, which is at a, you know, mid-20s price point. Mm.
Yeah, and there's, like you said, the full range, not only prices, but items, disciplines, and everything, and sizes as well. So it's great. As we let you go, Morgan, next segment we're going to talk with some of the chefs, but give the information, the address, and maybe the website. People can kind of get ready to head out and see you.
Absolutely. Visit us at 916 West Fulton. It's right on the corner of Fulton and Sagamon. We're open 7 days a week. And you can find out more at timeout.com/Chicago.
And it opens Thursday, right? It's not open to the public yet?
Yep, it opens tomorrow.
Oh, that is 8 a.m. Perfect. Morgan, great to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, we'll continue talking about it. Time Out Chicago, I've been reading it, I've been checking it out online, and now I can go to their market, and we'll find out more when we continue next. It's Wendy Snyder and Dane Neal on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal, and we're talking about, I'll just tell you right now, Chicago is not missing any place to eat. There are a lot of places to eat, but I love when new things happen. And this is Time Out Market Chicago, yeah. And it opens tomorrow in the West Loop.
It opens tomorrow. I got a chance to see the space, and we talked a little bit about it in the last segment. So it's an amazing space. This is going to be a hit right from the get-go, not only because it's right in one of those very, very hot areas, but also the space itself is beautiful. And it's an all-star lineup, and excited to have John Mannion, you know him from El Chabar, as Serena de Clandestina, and now he's got his own space there where he's going to be delivering up some of his Argentinian delicacies, cooking. Now think about this, Wendy, in a food court style setting with live fire. It's great to have John on the line. John, welcome to WGN.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I got to have my head examined, huh?
Maybe.
Well, but what's so cool about this, and we just talked with Morgan from Time Out, is that it's a this isn't like an airport situation where it's just, you know, a logo says Wolfgang Puck on there. You guys are really there. You're doing all the authentic things that people know, love, and expect. It's going to be the real deal.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy being, you know, for the last 10 days I've been in the space with all these other amazing chefs, most of whom are my friends or are now my friends. It's been like summer camp. It's been fantastic, and the food is, I'm blown away. I've eaten through almost everything there, but I'm super excited.
All right, give us some examples of what we'll find. Something unique.
Something unique. Brian Fisher over at Entente walked over a whole duck the other day.
A whole duck.
This is meant to serve four, or two, or one very hungry person, I guess. And it was out of this world. You know, Kevin Hickey's doing his duck dogs. He's also got a new thing for him, which is a take on Italian beef.
Is this the vegan Italian beef or no?
There's kind of a vegan version, right? I don't know if it's so.
He has a vegan Italian beet.
I love it. I love beets.
But John, for you personally, and we're going to be talking with Abe Conlon a little bit later on in the segment, but for you personally, the stuff that you have there and the stuff that people know and love, it's amazing to have that. Describe the beef rib, you know, the Maximo. It's just one of the things that you have there, but it is worth like every bit on the visual side. The flavor is amazing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's kind of my hero dish, and I wanted to do something, you know, and then I've got this live fire, and I'm kind of known for cooking. You know, when I was a kid, I lived in Brazil, and I spent a lot of time in Argentina. So this, what I'm doing at Time Out is kind of a reflection of both those things, not just necessarily one or the other. But they gave me this beautiful coal-burning Josper oven and this beautiful jade grill, so I'm trying to do it justice. The beef rib is one section of a cow rib. It is we smoke it. It's cooked for 12 to 15 hours and then grilled on pickup or covering it in a salsa verde, a green onion chimichurri. You char the green onions so right in the house. And then some sweet potatoes that we just put in the Jasper, and they caramelize on the outside, and we match them with some fresh horseradish. It's I mean, we overuse the term, it's ridiculous. This thing is ridiculous. And it's, you know, it should feed two or three people. But again, I know I have friends who are going to come in and just take it down.
So that slow cooking is what makes it tender, I would imagine. When my mom used to make beef ribs years ago, it was like, you know, you couldn't even get the meat off the bone. It was so tough.
It's really, you know, it's fatty and it's unctuous and it's falling off the bone. And it's, you know, it's maybe not for everyone, but those who know, know.
Yeah, it's and as we let you go, people are of course going to enjoy you there coming up starting tomorrow at Time Out Market. But you still have one of your famous places that you've had for a long time, La Serena. Talk a little bit about how people can still get in on that for the next, I think maybe month or so, and enjoy that.
Yeah, so Serena, I'm thrilled to be on Fulton and its evolution, because we opened up a restaurant about 8 years ago called La Serena Clandestina, which is a little sort of sexy homage to Brazilian beach food that I grew up on. And our lease is up, and we always knew this in 2020. So we are going to be moving on. And it's bittersweet. You know, it's been a great run, but you can still check it out until New Year's Eve is going to be our last service.
Well, good for you. Good luck to you.
And that's if you want to make reservations, that's LaSerenaChicago.com. And then, you know, we're still going strong at El Che over on Washington, which is another, we have a humongous 12-foot hearth where we grill meats and vegetables and all kinds of things. It's kind of a spectacular view, but the food is really based in Argentine cooking, and it's if I don't say so myself, it's really, really fantastic.
It's some good stuff. You've been doing it for just a great amount of time, and this great new concept happening at the market is going to be very, very cool. People are going to be loving it. So thanks, John. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Thanks
for having me.
I just want to sit around a hearth and grill meat. That's really all I want to do for the rest of my life.
So there's a little bit of that. There's pasta. There's purple pig. There's burgers. You've got mini mott going on. There are so many different really great and well-received concepts. And we mentioned Abe Conlon. We'll have him on at another time. But he's got his Portuguese food. There's a lot of healthy options, too. Not just meat. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, I wish they would have brought it all up now. This begins the season of overeating, I'm telling you.
That's right.
That's happening.
Get in the swing of things.
He is Dane Neal. I'm Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN.
Talk to me.
A turkey in the straw.
Get it? Yeah, there we go.
I was trying to think of why, if there's a chicken dance, why isn't there a turkey dance?
You know, the turkey...
They can't dance.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, turkeys are surprisingly combative, aggressive.
They're mean,
they're kind of mean. If you ever see them, we've had some situations out in California driving, and there's like a herd of turkeys trying to cross the road, and they're trying to block you or stop you, or they just won't let you go. They'll peck at the tires. If you get out, they'll attack you.
Really?
Turkeys are tough. So I think maybe just in general, of course, one gets pardoned every year, but turkeys, they deserve what's coming to them.
I find it shocking that you have not given them what they deserve and cooked a turkey.
I have not. I've got to think about that. Well, there's always somebody who's got a special recipe or is excited to do it or whatever. It's never been really available. And usually it's not like you're just making, it's not hamburgers. Well, you cook these four and I'll do. There's usually just one. I think you mentioned you get a little extra on the
Here's what I do. I get like I have, I think, 13 people coming this year, and I used to get like a big ass turkey. It said big ass turkey. And it's harder to stuff. I do stuff my turkey. I know people say that you're not supposed to, but I do. And I put a thermometer in and make sure it's finished. But now I just get about a 20-pound turkey, and then I get a 7-pound breast.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, that's what everybody wants. You don't want to run out of that.
I like dark meat. My sister, my mother-in-law, and I fight for the dark meat. Not, I don't like the legs. That's unless I'm at King Richard's Fair, I really don't want a turkey leg. But what I do is when I take the turkey out to let it sit for a little bit, I put that 7-pound breast in there. So while we're eating dinner, that's cooking. And then I slice that up for people to bring leftovers and take home. Look at me. Quite the hostess.
Wow. This is the time of year where, you know, you have this, I think the turkey situation, and they're working at the Great Turkey Lobby. I think it's actually called the Turkey Federation. And this is a real thing. It's not a space age kind of
polymer.
Co-polymer, right, or an adjunct Star Trek show. They're trying to make turkey more acceptable for other times of the year, because it's one thing to have it where everybody, kind of like pumpkin spice, right? Everyone trying to make it so it's, you know, turkeys are enjoyed throughout the course of the year, and just more ways to do them other than maybe a club sandwich, right? Or Thanksgiving, they really are limited. As popular as they are right now, there could be a...
Why don't I cook it more than once a year? I mean, you could get like a small turkey, like a 10-pounder or something. Why don't I do that on a Sunday?
Well, is it part of it? Maybe this isn't something that other people, 312-981-7200, can share. Is it because it's all so much work that you can't do it? Or is it that you feel sort of traditionally obligated to make it, and maybe it's not something that you really enjoy enough? Let's say there was National Pizza Day, everyone ate pizza, we'd still eat it another, you know, a month later.
Yeah, Bill hates turkey.
See, there's other people out there that feel obligated to participate in the turkey thing.
I don't know how you can hate turkey, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like a good turkey sandwich. Maybe that's his issue. But he just really doesn't like turkey, and in the past he goes to a family member's house and brings his own Chinese food, which I'm shocked they ever invite him anymore. Wouldn't you be offended, though, if you invited someone and they brought their own food? I do.
Well, but if you know Bill, you know that he's not doing it to slight you.
He's not.
He likes what he likes, and he's totally committed to like whatever he wants to eat or doesn't. He's down to stick to it.
All right. I know you know Chef Hans Aschbacher, who is a wonderful Chicago legendary chef. Everybody calls him Chefy. He would prepare food for a lot of the athletes here in the city. Was it at the Chicago Stadium?
Yep.
He's worked at Smith & Walensky and various other restaurants. I know he's had some knee issues, and I'm not sure exactly where he's working now, but he gave me a tip years ago about a dry brine. I know, you know, a lot of people brine their turkey. It's supposed to make it very... turkey's kind of bland, let's face it. So if you brine it, it's basically you're soaking it in salt water and herbs and spices, and it takes in some of that flavor.
Yeah, you're hoping to kind of pre-moisturize it. Yep.
Chef Hans gave us this dry brine. And Jasmine, I'm going to send this to you, but I'm pretty sure it has been on our Facebook page before. I've done it for several years, and I'm telling you, the results are amazing, and it's so easy. It's just one part Lowry's seasoned salt, which everybody should have in their cupboard right now.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time I said cupboard in your cabinet. One part Lowry's seasoned salt, two parts kosher salt, pepper to taste. I put a lot of black pepper in there, fresh ground pepper, and garlic powder to taste. I just put it in a Ziploc bag, shake it all up, and then basically the night before, you massage olive oil on the turkey, and you pat this dry brine on it, and then leave it in your refrigerator. Stuff it if you want. Cook it halfway. Before you put it in the oven, put in... onion, herbs. You can get this prepackaged. It's like fresh poultry herbs that you can get at your grocery store in that little plastic container, or it's rosemary, sage, I guess thyme as well.
Yeah.
And you put it in the cavity with some onion and celery. You cook it halfway. You take it out of the oven. You take all the veggies out, and that's when I stuff it. And then I've never gotten botulism. So the dry brine, Jasmine, I'm sending this to you. You can put it up on our Facebook page. It has worked every time. And if you have a question for the Butterball Turkey Talk Line co-director. Now would be the time to do it because Nicole Johnson is on the line with us. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having us, guys.
We're going to say hello to you. We're going to do a couple of questions. We're going to take a break, and then people have questions for you. The big one that happens, and I may have called the Butterball Turkey Talk Line years ago to ask this question, it's about thawing. When should you begin thawing a 23-pound turkey in the refrigerator?
Today.
Good question. Number one question we're getting right now. I'm looking around the room. The phones, email, chat, text. Of course, there's a lot of ways to reach us. But people don't realize it takes 24 hours for every 4 pounds of turkey meat to thaw in your refrigerator. So with that said, we have declared tomorrow, the 21st, as National Thaw Your Turkey Day.
Wow.
So it's a good way for people to remember, take that frozen turkey out of the freezer, put it in the refrigerator, and let it begin to thaw.
All right, what about all the goo that comes from it, all the juices? I mean, how do you thaw it? Do you just leave it wrapped up?
You know, I think you're referring to the raw poultry juices. So
or the goo.
The goo. It's the a technical goo. Term.
So when it pertains to thawing, exactly, you just leave the wrapper on. It's really going to help to ideally contain all those raw poultry juices in the wrapper. If you have a tray to put underneath the turkey in case there are any little pinholes in the packaging, it's going to help to prevent those juices from dripping down. But the prep work, you know, it's very simple. You simply take the wrapper off. You drain those juices over the kitchen sink. No need to wash it. You simply pat it dry with a paper towel and then put it inside your shallow open roasting pan. So the prep work is real minimal.
Okay, wait a minute. I don't have to rinse the turkey out. You know, I am wrestling with that thing in our sink every year.
and like literally,
I get the Butterball and I get it fresh. You can get it from your grocer. I have them hold on to it and then I pick it up, you know, Wednesday night. But I don't have to rinse that thing?
You know, you sure don't. And the fresh is really a great option for those that don't want to use the thawing process. It's already fully thawed, so that's a great option. Regardless if it's a fresh or a frozen, though, again, you just take that wrapper off, drain those juices. Washing it really is going to increase your, you know, chance of spreading those juices everywhere. We'll get phone calls, though. Do I need to get out some soap or bleach? Do I need to wash this turkey? No, you don't need to scrub it. You don't need to wash it. Just drain the juices and then just make sure you're cooking it to the final end temperature. Your best friend on Thanksgiving Day is that meat thermometer. It's going to register 180 in the thigh, 170 in the breast. Meat thermometer, best friend, truly the only way, the safest way to check for doneness.
180 in the thigh. What's the breast temperature?
170. Now, if you're a visual person like myself, you're going, where exactly are they referencing the deep thigh muscle? Hop on the Butterball.com website. We have a lot of how-to videos on there, one of which is exactly where to check for doneness with that meat thermometer. I think it's maybe a 30-second tutorial. Hop on there. It's going to show you exactly where to place that meat thermometer.
She is Nicole Johnson. She is very valuable at this time of year. Butterball Turkey Talk Line co-director. We'll take a quick break. If you have a turkey question, 312-981-7200, text or call WGN. Turkey time. We are talking to Nicole Johnson, who is the Butterball Turkey Talk Line co-director. And thank you so much for being with us. There is a woman who has been on the line for the last 15 minutes waiting to speak to you. So, Nicole, I will set you up with, is this Cheryl? Hi, Cheryl.
Yes, it is.
Cheryl, you have a question for Nicole Johnson.
Yes, I want to cook my turkey on my gas grill. How many hours does a 20-pound turkey take?
I love this joke.
Yes.
Hi, thanks for the question. So we definitely have good instructions for gas and charcoal grill. The Talk Line office is here in Chicago, so I know it's a little chilly today, but not too bad. You need to make sure, obviously, that your turkey is adequate size to fit in the grill. But typically a turkey that big is going to take fully thawed, of course. It's around 15 to 18 minutes per pound. So that is going to take upwards of about 4 hours. But if you give us a call, 1-800-BUTTERBALL, or even send us an email, we can give you a full page printout of exact instructions for that. But around 4 hours, 15 to 18 minutes per pound.
Thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Aww. Happy Thanksgiving.
You as well, Cheryl. We appreciate it. I want to cook the turkey the day before, says 312. Any tips on reheating it? Boy, that would make your day much easier, wouldn't it?
It sure would. And a lot of times people do want to do that in advance, which is totally understandable. I have four little butterballs at home myself, so doing things in advance is a great idea. What they do need to remember, though, is after it's fully cooked, rather than putting the whole turkey in the refrigerator, which would be nice for presentation purposes the next day, from a food safety perspective, you do need to slice that meat off the bone and store it in the refrigerator in a Ziploc baggie or container of such. And then you can reheat it the next day, and we have instructions for microwave reheating or even oven. I prefer the oven. Simply going to cover with aluminum foil. Heat a 350-degree oven for about 35 to 40 minutes or until those turkey pieces are nice and hot.
All right. I had mentioned before we got you on, Nicole, that I have about 13 people coming every year. I cook about a 20-pounder. I do stuff it. Is there a particular degree for the stuffing? I know you said 180 degrees for the thigh, 170 for the breast. What about with the stuffing?
Stuffing, it's my favorite way to check for doneness. You insert that meat thermometer right into the center of the stuffing, and the stuffing needs to register 165. In the center of the stuffing, good indication your turkey's done.
All right. I have in the past overcooked turkeys because you're worried about it not being finished, but when you take it out of the oven and leave it with tented with foil, it's still, the temperature goes up a little bit. Should you take it out a little early or no?
No, so theoretically, from a food safety standpoint, the turkey internally needs to be cooked anywhere to 165. However, for best eating quality, we recommend a 180 thigh temp and a 170. Reason being, we've done a lot of test studies here in the kitchen, and a lot of turkeys have come out, and we don't feel that there's a really large increase in that temperature rise, maybe only 1, 2, maybe even 3 degrees rise. So pulling it out anything below 165 is not recommended. 165 is the bare minimum. 170 or 180, though, is what we recommend for best eating quality.
Got it. And you guys are the traditional stop for many years, probably decades, when it comes to people. And some of the things I think maintain themselves as the same, like when to thaw and with the temperatures and some of that. But on the trend side, what are some of the things that you're hearing? I know every 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people were deep frying their turkeys and burning down their garages. Are you seeing more people now? We mentioned Cheryl was going to cook it on her gas grill, where people are either like smoking it in like a pellet smoker or like a Kamado, like a big green egg. Do you see, and are you hearing more about that stuff these days?
Yeah, we sure are. So the Talk Line's been in existence for 39 years.
Wow.
I've been with them for about 18 of those years.
Wow.
And certainly we've evolved with the times. When we started, it was just a mere 5 home economists manning the lines. They had all their information on an old school Rolodex. 39 years later, I'm looking around the room, we have women and men. Now we have men answering the phone calls, the chats, the texts, which we love because a lot of men are on turkey duty, right? I personally work an 8, if not even a 10-hour shift on Thanksgiving, so it's my own husband on turkey duty for our own family. So we love the fact that we have men talking to men. But to answer your question, in addition to evolving with the times, you know, the phone, the email, chat, text, a lot of new ways to reach us, we're seeing this new generation of millennials entering the kitchen, wanting to put their own stamp on the day. They want to help with Thanksgiving meal, but they want to try something different. So we're getting a lot of questions on air fryers are really popular this year. Mm. You mentioned deep fat frying. That's a delicious method. Electric countertop roaster. If you have a turkey breast, you can do a crock pot. The first caller, she asked about grilling. That's real popular. So there's really a lot of ways that we can give advice on. If you just reach out to us, we're certainly here to help.
And I do about a 20-pound turkey, and then I cook like a 7 to 8-pound breast while we're eating, and then I slice that up and give people to-go bags so everybody has – it seems like everybody wants the breast meat. So it's just another way to, give people a goodie bag.
Well, Nicole, do you have like a whole leftovers division? Because the leftovers are such a big part of this, and they mentioned the air fryer. I haven't tried it with turkey yet, but on the chicken side of things, as far as like reheating it, it's it's a great way to kind of seal in some of that moisture and kind of crisp up the skin. So the air fryer is a good way to go. Do you guys give leftover advice?
You know what we do? A lot of times it will be something simple, how to reheat it. We have a lot of trained chefs here on our staff. And on Thanksgiving week alone, of course, we're looking for new and fun ways to incorporate turkey. He's doing some turkey quiches for us one morning. So as soon as we get those all approved, we're throwing those recipes onto our website. But we do have a lot of really good ways to incorporate the leftover turkey. I'm looking on here right now. We have a avocado turkey sandwich. Mm. We have some recipes, a fig glazed turkey, white balsamic turkey. So a lot of really good recipes. Hop on that website. I think you're going to find those helpful.
39 years, millions of Thanksgiving cooks have reached out to the Butterball Turkey Talk line. I'm quite positive my aunt called about 39 years ago to say, oh my God, I just cooked that little bag with the giblets and gizzards. That won't hurt you, will it?
No, and that's a really common question we get. So people don't realize the heart, the liver, the gizzard, those are the giblets, right? And they're housed in a food-safe bag in the turkey cavity. There's two cavities of the turkey. The one cavity houses the neck of the turkey, and the other cavity houses the giblet bag. So to your point, people don't realize it's in there, or maybe they forget to pull it out or even check for it. So they call, they're panicked, I forgot to remove the giblet bag, is it going to harm my turkey? Absolutely not. They're probably not going to be very edible after, you know, 3 or 4 hours of roasting. But some people do know they're there. They pull them out in advance. My mom is one. She will go ahead and she swears that's what gives her stuffing. It's you know, delicious flavor.
I use that in my stuffing, too. I stuff the bird with the non-giblet stuffing, and then I make another one. And some people like it, some people don't, and I put, you know, a little label on which is which. I love hosting Thanksgiving. It's the best time of the year, in my opinion, because everyone can get together, and it's not about spending money or giving people presents. It's just spending time with one another, and I love it.
Spending time together. Yeah, I agree. A lot of Friendsgiving gatherings. We get a lot of phone calls. Maybe it's just a gathering of two. We've had phone calls, sorority houses, they're hosting, you know, Thanksgiving, these big Friendsgiving. So we get a lot of really good calls.
All right. What is the Butterball hotline? We need to give that out. And you can also text the Butterball Turkey Talk line as well. What is the number to call, Nicole?
Sure. It's 1-800-BUTTERBALL, certainly the heart of the talk line, my favorite way to talk to consumers. But you can also reach us email, chat, text. You can reach us on social media. Facebook and Twitter are really popular. The texting phone number is different. It's 844-877-3456. Text us your turkey question and even a picture, and we'll reach back out to you.
Wow.
That's coming high tech, man.
Yeah.
Well, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. As you mentioned, you're going to be working a very long shift, so I hope your hubby does a good job with the turkey.
I think he will. Thanks for talking turkey, guys.
Absolutely. Nicole Johnson, it's like, you know, you have these press interviews sometimes where people are going from line to line to line. She is really busy right now.
Her husband, you know, he has no excuses. He knows the number to call if he gets stuck.
Right. And just so you have the number to call, it's 1-800-BUTTERBALL. It's the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. She was the co-director, Nicole Johnson. Quick break. We'll come back. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal on WGN, and still to come, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.